All right, well, I had commented to Mark when he texted me and told me that the power was out, that it was fitting that we'd all get to be good and hot the night that I was talking about Satan. Michelle, my sister-in-law, commented one time that my Cofield grandparents have a wood stove, and they moved it to the back of their house when they added on one time. And there's the bedrooms that we stay in when we spend the night there are the closest ones to the wood stove. And Michelle made the comment that if anybody wasn't afraid of hell, they needed to spend the night in one of those bedrooms one time. Because it doesn't matter how high you turn the fan, it's just blowing heat. And it is awful hot in there sometimes. Of course, their bedroom's on farther away, and it's nice and cozy in there where they are. But we're all sweating back there on the other side of the house. But we are talking about Satan tonight. This week, we've been making a case for Christianity. And we started by confirming the Bible. We talked about the Bible, where it came from. We used the timeline up here to illustrate where the Bible came from. Talked about when it was written, who wrote it. And then we talked about the same Bible and how the prophecies in that Bible prophesied the coming of the Savior. And there were so many of them, and there's only one person that could have fulfilled them, and that was Jesus Christ. So we made a case for Christ based on the Bible. And then we used the same Bible and the same prophets, many of the same prophets, to make a case for the creation and to show how that they also pointed backwards at God the Father, the Creator, and showed that Jesus was even there in the creation. And then last night we made a case for the gospel and how that these three things together present a beautiful story for us as Christians and give us a way into a kingdom that we otherwise have no means of accessing. But once we're in this kingdom, as we established last night, we have to live worthy of the calling with which we've been called. We have to live worthy of the blood that saved us and allowed us into the kingdom. And while we're in this kingdom, we have an enemy. And that's who we're talking about tonight. We're going to talk about Satan tonight. We're going to establish who he is, where he came from, and what his method is for trying to get us to fall from our steadfast walk in faith in God. So let's start out just establishing who Satan is, because we need to understand our enemy. You know, it's common with sports and sporting events that when you go up against your opponent, you start by watching film. And our football teams, you know, when I was playing, it was VHS tapes. Now it's all streamed over the internet. But back when I was playing, you would get VHS tapes from your opponents and you would swap tapes and you would sit down and watch the opponent that you were going to play the next week. And you would watch their movements. You would watch their plays. You would try to learn all that you could about them because you wanted to know what you were up against. So when you saw it on the field, you would recognize it and maybe know what was coming. Well, that's what we're going to try to do tonight, is establish who our enemy is and figure out what his methods are so that when we see it, we can recognize it and avoid it before it's too late. I'm going to read a lot of verses tonight to start with just to establish who Satan is. Some of these passages come from those same prophets. All through the Bible, I mentioned last night that the Bible gives us heavenly history as well as earthly history, because we're going to see tonight that the Bible gives us glimpses into things that happened in heaven that have caused things that have happened here. So we're going to start. I'm going to go through these quick. Ezekiel 28 verses 13 through 19. A passage here says, "Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering. The sardis, the topaz, the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, the carbuncle, and the gold. The workmanship of thy tabrets and the pipes of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee." This is the key verses right here. "By the multitude of thy merchandise they have filled the midst of the earth with violence, and thou hast sinned. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God. And I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. For thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. And I will cast thee to the ground, and I will lay thee before the kings, that they may behold thee. Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thine iniquities. by thine iniquity of thy traffic. Therefore will I bring forth a fire from the midst of thee. It shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee. Speaking here about Satan, how that he was raised up because of his beauty. Satan was an angel. He was created by God, and he was beautiful. He was a beautiful angel. But his pride lifted him up. Isaiah chapter 14, verses 12 through 15 show that again Satan was lifted up with pride. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. And so Satan here, his pride showing that he even thought that he was better than God. He thought he was better than the one that created him. And his pride and his beauty lifted him up. He's described as the cherub that covered in Ezekiel. And all of those precious stones. If you could imagine something that was covered, that was the covering. You know, women and men wear pieces of jewelry with small pieces of those stones. But imagine if your whole cloak was made out of that. It would be so beautiful to look at. I can't really imagine how beautiful Satan is. He was created. But he fell from that. So Satan was in heaven, but his pride lifted him up. We find Satan in the book of Job, and if you remember from Sunday night, Job happens, it's chronologically out of order. It's put in with the Psalms and the Proverbs, but Job happens during Genesis, before the time of Israel, most likely because God was speaking to the patriarchs, and that's the way He used to speak to them before the time of Moses. So it's very likely that Job happens between Abraham and Moses. That's just my estimate as to when Job would have happened. But here's what is said of Satan. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? Then Satan said to the Lord, From going to and fro and walking in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And we remember from the rest of the story, he has a conversation with God about Job. And God, to some extent, hands Job to Satan so that he can do all these horrible things to him. He just couldn't kill him. So he didn't completely give him over to him, but he let him take away all his houses, lands, his family, his herds, his livestock, everything he had, even put boils all over his body. Tortured him, put him through a lot. But Satan at this time had access to earth and to God in heaven. So at this point he has access to both. But in Luke we find that Jesus says, Luke the 10th chapter, verses 17 and 18, And Jesus said to them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. The 70 had just returned in verse 17. They said, Even the devils are subject to us through thy name. And Jesus says, Look, I saw Satan fall from heaven as lightning. So sometime between Job and when Jesus makes this statement, Satan was cast out of heaven. What did that look like? Well, to Jesus it looked like lightning. In the book of Revelation chapter 12, verses 5 through 12, but we're going to focus starting with verse 7. But here we find a story of Jesus' birth and how the dragon was there to eat up the child. But then there was war in heaven, verse 7. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels. And they prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So Satan had produced a following of angels who followed him, no doubt, partially because of his beauty. And his pride, he lifted himself up above the other angels, and some of them followed him. And so then they eventually have war in heaven. Sometime between when Satan was there with Job, and when Jesus said this, there was war in heaven, and Jesus saw him cast down. My objective tonight is not to establish when that happened, but for you to see that Satan's path has changed. He was in heaven, he was cast out, but he still had access to heaven, and then he fought, and then he was cast out for good. no longer to have access to the presence of God. And today, friends, Matthew 25, verses 37 through 41, this is the story that Jesus is telling of the judgment, where the righteous say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink?" And Jesus says, down in verse 41, He says, "Then shall He say to them on the left hand, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for who? The devil and his angels.'" So their end is already known. They fought, they lost, they rebelled, they lost, they were cast out, they're here in the earth, and they're reserved unto fire. And friends, while He's here, He's going to try to take as many people down with Him as He can. So this enemy, this Satan that is out to get us, he is a bold individual. He thought he was better than God. He thought he was more beautiful than God. So he tried to raise himself up above God. He even had the audacity to fight against God's army. In all cases, he lost. And he knows that in the end, he has no hope. He is lost. There is nothing waiting for him but fire and damnation for eternity. But while he's waiting, he's trying to get as many people as possible to bow down at his feet. And Peter wrote and said that he, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he might devour. And Peter tells us to be sober and be vigilant, because we have an adversary that's out to get us. But you know, the roaring lion doesn't attack with a big roar, does it, to start with? How does he get to you? Well, I've never been attacked by a lion, but I've seen the videos, and what I've seen them do is they get in the grass where they blend in with their color, and they crouch, and they sneak up on you. And they get to where they're so close to you, and you're so unaware of their presence, that they are so fast that you don't have a chance to get away. And then when the lion knows that he's got it, he pounces. So what we have to do is we have to learn to look for the lion in the grass. Satan was an angel, but he was cast out, and now he is our enemy. What that means for us as Christians, friends, is we are behind enemy lines. You think about being a soldier and getting caught behind enemy lines. And you're surrounded by the enemy. You're trying to fight against the enemy, but you're surrounded by the enemy. You are in enemy territory, and as long as we're alive on the face of this earth, we are in enemy territory. Because Satan is here, his angels are here, and they are trying to take us down. Paul, in Acts the 26th chapter, verses 15 to 18, he's quoting what Jesus told him to do. And Jesus told him to rise upon his feet, for he had appeared unto him for this purpose, to make him a minister and a witness of the things which he had seen and the things that he would tell him. And he was going to send him to the Gentiles. In verse 18, here was his purpose: to open their eyes, to turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan unto God, that they might receive forgiveness of sins. Paul's purpose as a Christian was to teach people to turn them from the power of the enemy. Our job as Christians follows that we too need to be able to turn ourselves from the power of the enemy and share the gospel with others to turn them from the power of the enemy. If Satan can convince angels who've been in heaven, who've seen God on His throne, who've worshipped God on His throne, if he can convince them to follow Him, then you better believe that he can convince a bunch of humans that's never seen God on the throne. And he's good at it. So we're going to turn now to the first temptation, Genesis chapter 3. Because Satan had to pull out all the stops in the Garden of Eden. Because it was crucial to him to get the people to fall. It was critical to him to have a victory in the garden over Adam and Eve. And so Satan, in Genesis chapter 3 meets Eve somewhere in the garden. We don't know where they met. All of the drawings that you see of this story depict the serpent in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But the Bible doesn't say that. It doesn't say that he came to Eve while she was standing there. And I think we have good reason to think that they were not near the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that God had told them not to touch or to eat. So let's pick up the story in Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, Yea, hath God said, Ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, Ye shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest ye die. Okay, let's stop there. Eve admits that she knew what the right thing was to do. She knew what the wrong thing was and what the right thing was. That's critical, because how many times do we know the right thing that we should do or the wrong things we shouldn't do, the right things we should say, the wrong things we shouldn't say, but we find ourselves having done them anyway or said them anyway. Eve knew the right thing to do. And listen to how she describes the tree. She didn't say to Satan, He told us not to eat out of this tree you're hanging in right now. That's the other thing. He's always depicted as a snake, the way we know snakes. But he wasn't originally created to go on his belly. But here he was in whatever form he was in before he was cursed to go on his belly. And he's talking to Eve, and she says, He said not to eat of the tree in the midst of the garden. That makes me think they weren't in the middle of the garden, because she described it by where it was, and she wasn't right there by it. I'm just assuming that. But I think it makes sense that they weren't right there at it. I think they were somewhere else. You know what Satan was doing? He was planting a seed. He was just planting a seed for her to think about. Now, let's continue with our thoughts here. Eve says, God told us that we shouldn't touch it, and we shouldn't eat of it, lest we die. Had Eve ever seen death? I don't think she had. I don't think she knew what death was. She had never experienced it, because she was still alive. So far as we know, this is before Cain killed Abel. So she hadn't lost a son yet. We don't know that she had experienced death and loss. But here's something very important, and it's established all throughout the Bible. Lack of understanding on our part does not excuse obedience. Just because I may not understand what the law means does not excuse me from obeying what that law says to do. One of the silliest things that people think we do is take communion. Eat a little piece of bread and drink a little bit of grape juice. To people who don't understand, it has no meaning. And even to some of us, it may be difficult to grasp. And it is hard to understand. It's hard to understand someone giving their life for us. But that doesn't excuse our observance of the memorial. Lot's wife didn't know what it meant for somebody to become a pillar of salt, did it? I'm pretty sure she'd never seen anybody turn into a pillar of salt. But that didn't excuse her when she turned and looked back, did it? It didn't. Noah's family had never seen rain, had they? But that didn't excuse them from building the ark, did it? Lack of understanding does not excuse obedience. That's very important for us to understand. Because there are things in the Bible that we do not understand, but that does not excuse us from living in accordance with it. Let's keep reading in Genesis chapter 3. Verse 4, the serpent said unto the woman, "You shall not surely die." You hear that all the time. All it takes is for Satan to add one word to God's commandment, and he's twisted it and changed it. "You will not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat thereof, your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." Had God been deceptive with Adam and Eve? Because they didn't die right then. So he didn't say you'll die right then, did he? He said you're going to die. My personal take is that that was the moment when they lost their immortality. And they began the process of dying. That's my personal thought on it. I don't tell you that that's the truth. That's just what I think. Because they did die, didn't they? They eventually died. They passed. They're not with us anymore. But God was not being deceptive. Titus 2 and verse 1 tells us that God cannot lie. Hebrews 6 and 18 says that it is impossible for God to lie. And in Numbers 23 and 18, we find here a story of Balak. And in verse 19 it says, "God is not man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent." God does not lie. God was not being deceptive. He may not have given them all the details because they probably wouldn't have understood if they had. Because remember, at this point, they hadn't eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Their eyes weren't open. Their understanding was darkened. So there was no reason to explain all the gory details of death to them. All you need to know is, if you do it, you're going to die. So no, God was not being deceptive. God did not lie. It's man that always takes things and turns it into a lie. In Romans chapter 1, verse 25, speaking of the Jews, that they had changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. It is Satan and man that takes God's truth and twists it into the lies. It's not God. God doesn't lie. So we come down to verse 6. In Genesis chapter 3, it's decision time. So here's what's happened so far. Eve has this encounter with the serpent somewhere in the garden. Not necessarily right by the tree. Somewhere in the garden they meet. And he says, "Have you not been told you can eat of every tree in the garden?" And she says, "Not the one in the middle of the garden." And then they part ways. And then, sometime later, because in verse 6 it says, "When the woman saw..." I think to me that shows there's a period of time there. When she saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food, it was pleasant to the eyes, and it was desire to make one wise. Three things that Eve saw about that fruit. How long do you think she walked around and looked at it? You know, in my logical mind, if there's a tree there that says don't even touch it, much less eat of it, unless you're going to die, I'm going to say to Nicole, let's just not get close to it. Let's not even walk over there close by it. Especially, you have kids coming around, we're going to make the barrier even farther for the kids. We're not even going to get close to it. Okay? Like a guardrail. Let's not even get close to it. So maybe they hadn't been getting close to it. But then eventually, they're over there at it, aren't they? She saw the fruit, that it was good for food. And it was pleasant to the eyes. I wonder what it looked like. You know, we've all seen fruit that you just can't wait to take a bite out of it. Nicole gets these big strawberries, cuts them up for the kids in the morning. She calls them our good mood strawberries because they always end up smiling after they eat them. And sometimes those things are so big and red and juicy, you just can't hardly wait to just bite into it and see what it's going to taste like. I wonder what that fruit looked like. I'd like to see it. She saw it. She decided she was hungry. She decided it looked like it'd be good to eat. And it was one to make her wise. She took of it and ate. So now, let's look at something here. 1 John 2 and 16. All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. Do you recognize that? The lust of the flesh, It was good for food. It looked like it would be good to eat. Her body wanted to eat it. Lust of the eyes. It was pleasant to the eyes. And she also, because of that, wanted to partake of it. And the pride of life. It was fruit desired to make one wise. The three things that we are warned about that is in the world today are the exact three things that Satan used to tempt Eve in the very beginning. And that's the same thing he uses to tempt us today. Lust of the flesh is not just for the opposite sex. It's not just for inappropriate relationships. Lust of the flesh can lead us into lots of things that's wrong. Lust of the eyes is not just looking at the opposite sex. It's not just looking at a woman. Lust of the eyes can be many, many things beyond that. In this case, it wasn't some kind of fruit. I was about to say an apple. But we don't know that it was an apple. And then the pride of life. I think I would like to be smarter than I am. I wonder what that would be like. Would you eat it? If there was a tree outside right here and then you knew if you ate some of it, your IQ was going to jump 50 points instantly? A tree desired to make one wise? I think that what had happened was that Satan planted a seed with Eve and let her think about it. That's not uncommon. There's lots of seeds that are planted. In fact, many of Jesus' parables talk about the kingdom as a sower planting seeds. And you also know in those same parables, there's also an enemy who is sowing the tares. There's a lot of seeds being planted. But when you plant seed, when do you expect the fruit of that seed to come up? Not for some time later. Not for a while, in fact. This is the first summer that we've tried to have a little garden, but this is the first time that we planted from seeds. We started out with some little Dixie cups and planted some tomatoes and cucumbers in some little Dixie cups. And after the first little shoot came up, didn't even know what it was. It was just so small, we just knew it was green and we were happy it was alive. Harrison says, "Well, when am I going to get a tomato?" "It's going to be a while, buddy. It may be about 2 or 3 months before we have any tomatoes off of this thing." And he was just floored that it was going to take that long to get any fruit off of it. Okay, so Satan planted a seed. What did Eve do with it? She thought about it. She thought about it. I wonder how long. We don't know how long. We could speculate about how long she thought about it. But she thought about it. Because it says, when she saw the fruit was those three things. And it could have been that before Satan planted that seed, that she didn't see that fruit as something good. She might have looked at it with contempt and thought, that's going to do something bad to me. I'm going to stay away from it. But the more she thought about it, the better it looked and the less bad it looked. And so over time, what at one time was offensive to her now became a possibility. The Bible tells us about people keeping things in their heart. In fact, Jesus' mother in Luke the 2nd chapter, two different times, there were sayings said about Jesus, and it said that Mary kept these things in her heart and she pondered them. I wonder if that's what Eve did. I wonder if she kept those thoughts in her heart. You will not surely die. You will not surely die. You'll be as gods, knowing good and evil. You will not surely die. How long did it take for that to repeat before that fruit looked edible? I don't know. Satan planted a seed of doubt and a choice. He deceived her, and eventually she was ready to give in. Eventually she was ready to eat. James, the 1st chapter, verses 13 through 15, says, "Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust is conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it's finished, brings forth death." So there's a process here. Just like planting the seed, it takes time for that seed to produce fruit. When there's a seed of sin sown, it takes time for that seed to produce fruit. It's not going to happen just like that. A lot of times, the ugly, angry things that I've said are things that I've thought about saying for a long time before I actually said it. You ever had somebody hurt your feelings? And you think about it a lot? I loved this. Sam said it, and I can follow him on it. He said, you know, sometimes I get in the car, and before I get out of the car, I'm mad at everybody. There's just been me in the car. And he's been sitting there thinking about things that's happened and going on, and he gets himself worked up. And I've done that before. Perhaps you have too. And we think about things that's happened, and that seed sits there, and we're letting it grow. This seed of anger, this seed of revenge, this seed of hatred that grows. And then eventually, we might actually say something to that person. And sometimes when we do, we instantly regret it. So it's been this process. It's been this process that takes time. It didn't happen just instantly. Satan plants seeds in advance of opportunity. He expects us to care for the seed and nurture it by thinking about it, dwelling on it, wondering about it, pondering it over in our heart. You will not surely die. And eventually, you know what happens? It just gets to where, well, it's just not that bad. And we can start to justify all kinds of things. We start comparing things to the way the people around us in the world live. And what at one time would have seriously offended now does not. I heard a country song today, and we turned it off right after we heard it. But in this country song, it had drinking beer, chasing women, and chewing tobacco all mixed up with praying to God. All in one person. And that was just normal. Is that the life of a Christian? Or should we be offended by that? That people who pray are presented as people who are drinking beer, chewing tobacco, and chasing women. I don't want that to be what people think about Christians. I don't like it when people are on Facebook and they've got one comment that's bashing somebody or telling people to lie, and their next comment is praising God. What kind of image are they putting out? I know nobody's perfect. I'm not saying that. But people that are not Christians look at that and they think, what a bunch of hypocrites. But it's because we get conditioned and the sin is just not that bad anymore. It's just not that bad. Satan's got us convinced that it's okay. Eventually, we may have opportunity to partake ourselves. Now, the even sadder part of the story, Eve had eaten the fruit. Now, look at this. The woman saw that the tree was good for food and it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desired to make one wise. And she took of the fruit thereof and ate it. You know what didn't happen when she touched it? She didn't fall over dead. She got real close to it. She reached up and she touched the fruit and nothing happened. Hey, maybe Satan was right. Because nothing happened. God said, when I touch it, I'm going to die. But I'm not dead. In fact, nothing's changed. So she then pulls it and she ate it. And then she gave to her husband who was with her. I always had in my mind that Eve's off by herself. Adam was with her. He watched her, and then he ate one right after her. How sad. Is that romantic? That Adam says, oh, Eve, I'm going to go down with you, honey. If you're going to die, I'm going to die right alongside you. No, I don't think so. I think what that shows is that maybe Adam had a little desire to try that fruit too. What he needed was a little push. And when he saw his wife touch it and eat it and not die, he decided it'd be all right for him too. So what happens to us? Do we see people partaking in sinful acts and nothing bad happens? There's no consequences. So we assume, didn't hurt them. Maybe all right for me too. Maybe we don't follow others, but what could other people be following us into? What do we listen to and talk about with other people? What do we watch and talk about to our friends and the world? What do we condone? What do we accept? What are we okay with? And the people look at us and think, well, if it's okay for him, then it's all right for me too. Eve was deceived, but Adam knew just exactly what he was doing. 1 Timothy 2:12 through 15 says, the reason why a woman is not to teach in the church and have authority over man is because Adam was first formed and then Eve. That's reason number one. But Adam was not deceived. The woman was deceived and was in the transgression. Adam knew full well what he was doing. And that's why when the Bible talks about sin came in by one man, the blame is put on Adam. Because he stood there knowing full well what was going on. He let his wife do it. And he took of it himself. So what we see in this story, that this enemy of ours, this Satan, this created angel of God, that fought against God, who wanted to be God, who thought he was better than God, is on the earth convincing people that it is not that bad to do what God said not to do. That's what he's doing. It's not that bad to accept a little sin. To accept a little error. To accept a little wrong. People all around you are doing it. Nothing bad's happening to them. So it's not that bad. But friends, it is. And Satan's devices, he has many devices. But he has one method. That one method, friends, is to plant seeds of doubt and desire in our heart. Let that seed be nurtured by who? Who is the only person who can nurture a seed of doubt and desire? It's me. And you. So if I've got that anger towards somebody, if I don't want to follow James's example and go all the way through until the lust is conceived and it brings forth sin, what's that lust? What's that desire? Maybe it's revenge. Maybe it's that I feel like I got to say something and I think about it. I ponder it over in my mind over and over and over. And eventually, I may have the opportunity to act. You remember David's son? I believe it was Absalom who wanted his sister Tamar. And he thought about it, and he thought about it, and he planned, and he came up with schemes, and he finally got her, and then he hated her. But he thought about it and planned it. What about Ananias and Sapphira, who had sold a possession at a time when the church was just beginning and people were losing jobs, they were losing lifestyles, so people that had anything sold it and combined it all together so they could share. So they sold some land and it was theirs. There was no rule or law that said you have to give everything. But they planned and conceived in their heart that they were going to lie about it because they wanted to look like they were giving everything, but they were really going to hold some back. And they thought about this for a while. They planned it. Where do you think that seed came from? Satan planted it. He might have planted it as soon as they sold it and saw how much money they had in their hands. They may have been really planning all along to have given all of their money like they said they did. They may have even told some people they were going to give all of their money. But then they actually get it in their hands and they're thinking, whoa, hang on a second. This is more than we thought it was going to be. But we've already told some people that we were giving all of it, so we're going to follow through with what we said we were doing, but let's keep some of this back. They thought about it, they planned it, and then they eventually acted on it. And when they acted on it, what happened to them? They were killed, both of them. It said fear went through the church because of what had happened. All throughout the Scriptures, all throughout our lives, we can look back and see how that the times where we found ourselves where we didn't want to be, it all started with us thinking the wrong way. I can almost guarantee you that. that it started with us thinking the wrong way. We had some small desire for something, and Satan found it, and he planted seeds of doubt, and eventually gave us opportunity, and we acted on it. What are some of his devices that he uses? There's just a few of them. Fashion, food, drink, popularity, progress, gain, glory, people, revenge, bitterness, anger and wrath, worry. That's just a small list. But can you see any of those seeds having been planted in your life? Can you see how the enemy might have sown seeds of worry or anxiety in your life? Might have sown seeds of prosperity and gain in your life? Might have sown seeds of revenge and anger? Might have sown seeds of desiring popularity and the praise of men? Might have sown seeds of pride? Because if he has, and you've let it stay, and you've kept it in your heart and pondered over it, in time, there will be an opportunity. You can count on it. If there's something sinful in your mind, friends, you count on it. It was put there by Satan. He's planted a seed, and he is everywhere. He is in the aisles at the grocery store. He's on the billboards. He's on the commercials, in the TV shows. He's in the movies. He's on the radio. He is everywhere around us, planting seeds. I mean, you just imagine somebody out in the field with one of those spreaders walking, spreading seed or fertilizer or something. You just imagine Satan following you everywhere you go, and he's just showering you all day long. You're just getting peppered from all different sides. He's just hitting you from every angle. Because that's what he's doing. All he wants is for one of them to stick. He just wants one of them to stick and us to let it grow. That's our enemy. It doesn't matter which one of those seeds is your weakness. His plan is still the same. And if you find yourself thinking about it, you've got to recognize that you are in the early stages of being drawn away by your own lust. If you find yourself thinking about whatever this evil desire is. If you let yourself think about it so far that you're getting to the point where it doesn't seem like it's all that bad, and you're starting to justify it, you've gone a little farther down Satan's path. And if you get to the point where the opportunity to act on it comes and you don't have that twinge of guilt and that twinge of fear come over you because of what's about to happen, you've gone a little too far down the path. And eventually, you end up so far that you'll commit the sin and death will come. Perhaps not physical death, spiritual death. If we then continue in that sin and walk away from our Lord. So Satan's methods haven't changed. We must be able to recognize it. We must be able to look at our lives and see his game plan playing out. And when we recognize it, we need to change what we're thinking about. What kind of things do we think about? Well, I think Paul gave us a pretty good list when he wrote to the Philippians. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report. I can't even remember all the whole list. But if there's any virtue, if there's any praise, all these good things, that's what you think about. Find those things to focus on. And it'll drive the other out of our mind. But if we're not focused on that, those seeds are going to crop up. And we're going to have a lot of weeds. Friends, we got to look for Satan because he's all around us. He's in here tonight. And he's probably trying to get some of you to think about something else besides what we're talking about. He's probably trying to keep you distracted. Maybe you're hungry. Maybe you're tired. And he's trying to use some part of you to distract you from learning about who he is and how he's going to fight against us. But we've got to look for him. We've got to recognize he's there. The Bible tells us he's there. The Bible told us where he came from, where he is, and what he's doing. And we know now how to fight back against him. Tomorrow night we're going to talk about our faith. Because the Bible tells us that our faith will shield us from all the fiery darts of the wicked one. So now we know how He's going to throw those darts. Tomorrow night we're going to talk about the faith that shields us from those darts and how we can strengthen our faith so that we can withstand. And in the end, having done all, to stand, what Paul says about the armor of God. Having done all, we can stand after having stood against Satan through the power of Jesus. We can overcome. Friends, if there's anyone that we can assist tonight through obedience to the gospel or for prayers to come back into the church, please let us know how we can help while we stand and sing.